Blog Talk Radio.
Here comes the ball. The lob. The jam! Oh, what a monster jam by the Andre!
Hey, Rob. What's up, guys?
Hey.
How's it going?
Good. I'm trying to upload this intro that had a fade on it, but it's taking forever. Mm-hmm. Oh, we might just use the one that has the weird cut on it. For now, one more time.
That's fine.
What's going on? What's all that sound?
Oh, I'm eating some candy.
Oh.
Happy Halloween, Rob.
I got a bunch of candy, but I don't think that many kids trick-or-treat around where I am.
Nobody trick-or-treats in Ann Arbor, basically, but one of my apartments was going to be a drug dealer for Halloween for his costumes, so we got a bunch of candy instead of drugs.
Nice.
So there's a bunch of extra candy.
People go out a lot, you know, so it's like a full week event here, pretty much, depending on like which day it falls upon. Yeah, I know people going out even like Wednesday or Thursday in Halloween costumes. I'll probably go, I don't know if I'll go till next weekend, but I mean,
there are a lot of things that happened this weekend.
Yeah. I have friends who are supposedly going to costume parties next weekend. Not here, though, but elsewhere. So I'm sure it's possible here as well.
Cool. All right, so what do you guys want to talk about today? There's a lot to talk about.
I fell asleep during the Pistons game last night.
I was really angry during the entire game, but yeah.
So I missed I remember Austin playing well in the first quarter, first half. Okay, I fell asleep some time in the second quarter.
It's fair. That's a fair observation of that game. Just music.
Yeah. I mean, I like what you have in the description, and talk about Blake for sure.
Yeah.
Mostly positive, some worrying stuff from the Tolliver stuff, defense. Definitely Gallinari, Doc's rotations, defense. I guess just generally what we think of the bench, and maybe just, I mean, we don't need, like, I don't think we really need to talk about Austin or like DJ. That much, like maybe just be like Austin's hot from deep, that's cool. DJ like kind of misses a point guard to get him lobs, but I don't think there's like that much new there.
Yeah.
And Austin basically looks like the same player as last year, which is fine. Yeah, definitely Gallo. Like, how concerning is Gallo being absolutely awful. Like, not just bad, yeah, but, like, horrid. Beverly, probably just talk about Beverly, compliment Beverly for a few minutes.
Yeah.
I don't know, do you want to talk about, like, rotations, like Thornwell, Decker, any of those guys?
I mean, we can talk about general rotations and just kind of mention the bench players and how Thornwell and Decker are kind of being put more in the rotation. We can talk about them together, I guess. So we can talk about Blake, of course. Gallo, I think, is probably the second most pressing thing. Beverly, we could always talk about how good he's been. Doc's rotations can probably mention Decker and Thornwell and all the role player guys. I don't really think we need to talk about Austin too much. He's just, like you said, he's just the same old guy. We can maybe mention him a little bit in the rotation since he's starting now. The defense and the bench. Lou Williams, I think, is an interesting topic. We can always talk about him a bit.
Yeah, I agree.
The rotations. So we can do that. So kind of Blake, Gallo, Beverly rotations, including Austin and Williams. And pretty much from there, I think we'll have a pretty – decent episode, so we'll just kind of riff off of that. Do we have any Twitter questions or anything?
I can ask.
Yeah, we can throw a feeler. We can throw a feeler out there and see if we get anything to end the episode. Okay, and I think that's more or less it. Maybe the Pistons are just going to win the championship this year. Who knows? Yeah. Okay, so I'm about to start.
I mean, I think they're good. But
yeah. I think they're good too. I think they're better than they. I mean, I love Avery Bradley, so I can go on about that guy. But I think they're not terrible. I didn't think we should have lost to them, but hey.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am afraid the Warriors are just going to beat the shit out of us since they lost tonight. But you know.
Wait, yeah, I mean that's just a given.
Yeah. All right. I'm gonna start. Aditya, are you there? No.
Oh shit! Sorry, I'm on mute. I was on mute. Oh. I was like, I've been talking last minute or two. I was wondering. I didn't realize you. That's okay.
I'll mute.
Did you have anything to add?
No. I think we already got everything that I said. Anyways, I was gonna say. Yeah, I mentioned rotations, right? Or where was my mic on for that?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, maybe I guess like talk about weather, because I know Doc said in the preseason, right before the game started, he's like he wants one of Blake, Gallo, DeAndre on the floor at all times. And so far, rotations mm-hmm. haven't really carried that out. And they've been mm-hmm. going like the last two games, at least from what I saw, like the first half of the Pistons game, who they played for that, the Jazz game, right? Like they went.
Yeah,
Jazz game. Like they went really not deep. No, it wasn't whoever they played on. Oh, Portland and the Jazz game, I guess. Like, they go really deep into, like, the first and third quarters with most of their stars, including, like, all three front court guys.
Mm-hmm.
And,
okay.
Yeah, it's definitely not. I mean, it's, like, very half-hearted, like, kind of haphazard staggering so far.
Yeah.
And just, like, trying to, we could talk a little bit about what would be ideal, like, what needs to change. And bias is obviously with Doc, like, whether or not it'll actually happen.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, I think he's done a good job staggering Blake and Gallo, I guess, specifically. Mm-hmm. And he's done a pretty good job with the guard rotations. I mean,
yeah.
Not that we had our full deck initially, but even with mm-hmm. Teodosic, when he played briefly, he kept the defensive guard and an offensive mm-hmm. guard, which is good.
The minutes in general have been pretty high, right?
Huh?
Carter's minutes in general have been pretty high, right, compared to...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like yeah. more reminiscent of 20... Well, his first season, like they were all, or not 2014, 2015, they were high, obviously. But the 2 years after that, like he'd done a really good job of keeping the minutes down. I mean, yep. by playing these terrible all-bench units, though.
Well, we should actually talk about the Teodosic injury because we haven't potted since then.
That's so,
yeah, we will.
Yeah,
we will.
Just, like, yeah.
Okay, I think we mentioned Thornwell there.
Yeah, we will in the rotations. I love Thornwell, so mm-hmm. I'll definitely mention him. Okay, we're going to start.
This is the best place for me. This is a place where I want to start and finish my career. A long drought, a lot of unfinished business here.
Well disguised by Blake Griffin. A lot.
What's up, everyone? The Love, the Gem, the podcast. We're back. Let's talk a lot about what's been happening in the regular season. I don't know if we haven't talked about the regular season and some basketball games since our preview a bit ago, but we're ready to talk some Clipper basketball. I'm here with Robert and Aditya. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Pretty solid, I guess. Could be better, could be worse. That's always the case with the Clippers, isn't it?
Yep. And last night's game is very indicative of that. Actually, it probably couldn't have been much worse, to be honest. The start of the Clippers season was pretty great, even through what was kind of a lackadaisical fourth quarter in Portland. They still pulled out what was a very dramatic win, start off 4-0, best record in the league for a very brief minute until they lost to the Pistons, who are on a roll right now. Maybe the Pistons are just the best team in the league, who knows. But the Pistons had a very interesting fourth quarter, and the Clippers had a very uninterested fourth quarter, including what had a pretty lackadaisical Blake Griffin fourth quarter that probably gave us bad flashbacks to all the criticisms about Blake not being enough in the fourth. But before we talk about that, Blake Griffin has been fantastic to start the year. He had a bad game last game, but he's been pretty great. He's been an MVP candidate. I'm sure he'll be up in the polls, all those MVP rankings polls that should be coming out tomorrow. What have you guys thought about Blake Griffin? He's been fantastic. Have you noticed anything from him particularly that he's kind of added to his game aside from, you know, his three-point shot? I would like to take a very brief second to just give a great round of applause to all the pundits that just kind of assumed that Blake Griffin would be out until December or January while knowing very, very little about his injury. Just a great job to them. They were just fantastic. They know who they are. So we can start with you, Rob. What do you think about Blake?
So, I mean, I've loved what Blake has done. He's been really good. He's putting up the best numbers for mostly across the board since his third place MVP finish, which was four seasons ago now. It was 2013-14. His rebounding is up to – it's even higher than that season. His rebounding is the highest it's been since the first season with Chris Paul, which is like ancient history at this point. That's like 6 years ago. He's getting to the line more than any time since that third-place MVP finish, exactly eight times a game. And I think most impressively is his three-point shooting. He's already made 12 threes, which is more than he's made in any season except for last season. He's taking almost six of them a game, and just he looks very fluid and comfortable out there. Last year, he started taking more of them, but he still hesitated a lot, and he still didn't really take any except off the catch and shoot. And now he's dribbling into them. He's taking them off step backs, not just to heave at the end of the shot clock, but the shots that he feels like he can take and make over all sorts of defenders. And that's a huge, huge addition to his game. If he just added a nice catch and shoot three from the corner and maybe the wing, like that would have been nice. But adding an overall outside shooting game off the dribble and is just incredible, and it's opened up the lanes to the basket, which is why he's drawing more free throws.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's able, if guys come out to defend him on the line, he can go by them and then draw the foul. He definitely isn't old Blake athletically. I mean, I still think there's several times every game where he gets kind of blocked or somebody's able to get in front of him or contest his shot where it would have been a poster 4 or 5 years ago, but it hasn't really mattered so far except against the Pistons, and hopefully that'll just be a bit of a fluke.
How about you, Aditya?
Second everything Rob says, the one thing I want to note, you know, I saw this interesting stat earlier today from John Schumann at John Schumann, S-C-H-U-H-M-A-N-N. But he was just charting over the years in each by season Blake's, the ratio of like his mid-range field goals to three-point field goals attempts. And obviously this is pretty evident to us from the eye test, but in the early years, like the ratio was like 10 mid-range shots or whatever for every three-pointer he attempted. Last year, it was a little bit closer to 3-1. This year so far, he's taken only 8 mid-range field goals and 29 three-point attempts. So just this year, finally, you know, because we've been talking about Blake adding the three-pointer for years. He's been flashing the ability to. And Doc's talked about in previous years how it was just a confidence thing for him and how the team had been pushing for him to add the shot. But this year, finally, he's rounded the corner there. I guess, you know, seeing the direction of the league has might have helped push him there a little bit. But it's very pleasant development that he's finally taking it with confidence and showcasing that he has the range as well, which he may not had even 2 or 3 years ago. But, yeah, other than that, you know, his I guess maybe we should touch on the Clippers team defense so far at some point. I'm going to guess that part of it is at least because of the schedule, but their defensive rating, I believe, is in the top five right now. And Blake's is somewhere around 90.0 points per 100 possessions.
Hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know. I guess you guys could speak more to whether or not, you know, you feel like that's actually indicative of his level of play or just pure anomaly. I don't know. What do you think, Rob or Shapon?
The Clippers have been very impressive switching on pretty much everything. I mean, I guess aside from last night where they got really lost, in, especially in the fourth quarter, where they just got torched over and over again with open three-pointers that pretty much won the Pistons the game. Aside from that, they've been very impressive being able to switch off pick and rolls. And Blake, one thing that Blake has always had, he's always had pretty nimble feet. And I think that's kind of a reason why we've always sort of been excited for his possibilities as sort of a defender that can pick up smalls up front. I remember at the beginning of last year when the Clippers had such a great, you know, had just incredible ratings offensively and defensively for their 14-2 stretch, and they switched everything. Blake used to say that he was really excited about taking on the challenge of switching onto smaller players and being able to defend on the perimeter, because he's always had really good feet when he's put his mind to it. His problem has always been that his wingspan has left a lot to be desired, but he's never had a problem moving his feet. I think Blake can be a plus defender. It's just a matter of consistency and being locked in. He's never going to be a great shot blocker like DeAndre. He doesn't have the wingspan for that. And now he's just slowly losing his hops as we go along. He had a really nice block, I want to say, against the Blazers. It was kind of a chase down block. Oh, no, it wasn't against the Blazers. I think it was one of the home games. It was probably against the Jazz, where there was a fast break opportunity and he kind of turned around and had a nice block. But it was either against the Jazz or the Suns. It was one of those two games. But he's never going to be a leaper. But I think Blake and, in general, the Clippers, they've done a really good job switching. Gallinari is kind of the opposite of Blake, where he has length, but he doesn't really have the foot speed. But I don't think Gallo's been torched or anything defensively, which has also been a nice thing, because I was always worried about Gallo's foot speed. Of course, we haven't really played any premier small forwards. The best small forward the team's played has probably been, I don't know, Ingram? I have no idea. So Kevin Durant will definitely be a test for Gallinari tomorrow.
Tobias Harris, right? Or did he get matched up on Blake?
Tobias Harris in the first half was matched up against Blake, but then he played small forward in the second half.
Brandon Ingram.
Stanley Johnson.
Who else is there? TJ Warren. Portland. Harkless, I guess. Or Aminu, rather.
Aminu. Not really a murderer's row of small forwards yet. Yeah. So we'll see how Gallinari will play.
Whoever Utah had.
Yeah, Utah. I have no idea.
Ingles,
who is also not very, you know, fast. Mm. So Ingles is probably true. A very comparable player to Gallinari in a lot of ways, but it'll be interesting to see how Gallo can handle himself against some premier small forwards like the Kawhis and the Durants, because we're definitely going to be facing players like that. How do you like the defense so far, Rob? And what do you think about this Clippers team right now defensively? Is this something that can be sustainable? What do you think, Rob?
Well, I mean, I think right now they're actually the number one defense, though, and that might change after tonight's games, but I think even after because their overall defense against the Pistons wasn't bad. In the fourth quarter, they did get torched a fair amount on switches and in transition. But, I mean, part of it was just the Pistons missing shots. But they only gave up, 94 points, which is not awful. So I think they're still the number one defense in the NBA. I don't think that's going to continue just because Blake and Gallo, neither of them is really like a minus defender, but neither is a plus either. So I can't see them being number one with two guys like that. But I think as long as Pat Beverly and DeAndre Jordan are healthy, they're going to be like a pretty good defense, probably top 10, maybe even top five, honestly, because those guys are really good. And the Clippers, even more than just individual talent, I've really liked what they've done. They are rotating really well, and they're making the correct rotations, and they're switching at correct times and sticking with their switches. And there were times last year where they'd overly switch, and for like no apparent reason, it would create mismatches. Like in that Jazz series, they were to get mismatches seemingly every time down the court on switches, and it just made no sense. But this year, they're switching less, and when they are, I think they're doing it better and against, you know, more opportune opponents. So I like that a lot. And yeah, they just look really competent on defense. And that's great to see. It's great to see because defense is what wins games night in and night out during the regular season. I think that part of the reason why the Clippers fell apart on defense last night is because their offense was so bad and the Pistons were able to get out in transition. And that is what I would caution for people who say, you know, oh, the defense is what will carry us, defense this. Defense does depend on offense a fair amount. If you can't score baskets, it's really tough to play good defense for 48 minutes because you just get really tired and opponents start ramming it down. But, yeah, they look good, and I think a lot of that really has to do with Patrick Beverley, who has looked every bit the all-NBA defensive player that he came into the season as. He hounds point guards. He just makes it a mission to get up on them. He gets at least one or two nice like pokeaways a game, and he's usually able to reach and get steals without gambling. It's just a product of his awareness and just his help defense, really. So he's been awesome on defense, and DJ has had some of his typical DJ moments where he looks a little lazy, but he's rebounding like a madman, and defensive rebounding is a huge part of defense. So as long as those two are there and doing what they do, I think the Clippers will be good. But yeah, Pat Beverley has been awesome so far this season.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Pat Beverley. That guy's been fantastic. He's also made me want to scream first team whenever I accomplish anything in life, which I appreciate very much. He's been as good as advertised. He's been a ferocious defender. He hasn't given anybody a break. He embarrassed Lonzo Ball in his first game in the league, and he's pretty much been on a streak of great defense since then. Just every game, you can't help but see something that Pat Beverley does. I remember last game, a pretty incredible turn of events. Avery Bradley had a fast break on his own. He front-rimmed, dunked. He got blocked by the rim on a dunk. And then still nobody was there. And then Beverley ran into the fray and blocked a layup attempt he had. And I think the Pistons still ended up scoring on that. But the crowd was going crazy. And I feel like Pat Beverley injects life into the crowd like we haven't seen since maybe Blake was a bit younger and dunking on everyone. Really, the most energetic the crowd has gotten over the last couple of years has been when somebody's missed their first free throw in the fourth quarter and free food is on the line. Aside from that, the crowd really doesn't get loud enough. But Pat Beverley has multiple times really just injected that energy, not just to the fans, but to the team. And his energy is great. And honestly, he's making me miss Chris Paul a lot less, a lot sooner than I thought I would. How do you guys like Pat Beverley? I know Rob talked a little bit already about it. What do you think about Pat, Aditya, and just like the energy he's bringing to this team?
I mean, I really appreciate what he's doing both on and off the court. And while I love Chris Paul and won't really speak ill of him on this podcast, you know, despite his absence, Beverley's been able to take a strong role in the locker room and really rally the team around him as kind of a culture-setting guy, which is really great to see. And I think it's nice to see the team, especially we saw it, I believe, in the Utah game, like adopt that his like bulldog defensive ethos, the way they destroyed the Jazz's offense and hacked apart their plays, stole and blocked the ball. That's had Pat Beverley written all over it. And yeah, you know, this he's a guy who this team really needs, and both for his leadership and for his on the floor play. But yeah, his on the floor play, especially his like shooting, his willingness to create for himself, is a lot more than what I anticipated it being.
Anything else to add, Rob?
Yeah, I think his shooting has been really good. He was a good shooter last year. He's been a good shooter for the past few years, but it's still really nice that he's able to hit those spot-up jumpers, especially because, transitioning a little bit, the Clippers' main offensive threat outside of Blake Griffin was supposed to be Danilo Gallinari, and he has been really, really bad. So it was nice to see Beverly and now Austin the past few games really hit those open shots, because every time the ball gets to Gallinari, it seems like he's going to miss. So we'll see. The one thing I will note about Beverly is I've loved almost everything, but he's had some really, really bad turnovers, which is actually unusual for him. He's averaging like 3.5 a game now, which would be by far a career high. So I'd expect those to come down a little bit as he becomes a bit more adapted to the team and the scheme and just the way the Clippers run offense. But yeah, I mean, he's been great. And the turnovers is just a very minor blemish on what has otherwise been a great five games. Love the shooting. He's had some nice takes to the basket. He can make, he's not a great like passing point guard, but he knows how to make fundamental passes, and his defense and energy and just everything intangible he has in spades. So he's been awesome.
Yeah, I kind of loved how often he got offensive rebounds on a sleeping Damian Lillard in that Portland game. He had 5 offensive boards and some huge ones against the Blazers that really saved the team on some sloppy plays. So he just has that sort of hustle that, you know, I don't want to say that we haven't, because Chris Paul was just a bulldog defensively, but you never really saw him crashing the glass, and seeing a guard crash the glass, because, you know, we've had J.J. Redick and Chris Paul who, you know, they have their own strengths, but you don't really see them crashing the glass like Russell Westbrook would. And Pat Beverly's always been a pretty good offensive rebounder for a guy his size. He has a surprising amount of quickness that I kind of didn't appreciate until I saw him on the Clippers, where he would just really blow by a guy. And he's had multiple times where he's blown by guys and not finish open layups, which has been a shame, but he really can get by his defender with a quick burst of speed, which is pretty cool to see. He's been a really great player. He's averaging great numbers, 3.5 boards, pretty much 3 assists and a couple of steals. He's been fantastic. You kind of touched on him briefly, Rob. Danilo Gallinari, he's been a pretty frustrating player. Yesterday, he actually seemed like maybe he would have got it together near the end of that game. He had a 3-pointer that brought the team back within 3, I believe. And then he had this great drive to the rim, but then he hit nothing but iron on a dunk attempt, and that pretty much sealed the deal for the Clippers. He was 4-16 last night, and 4-16, 4-13, I mean, it's pretty much what Gallo's been. His best game was against the Utah Jazz. Actually, he had a pretty good first half against the Blazers, and then just completely disappeared in the second half. It's hard to really know what's going on with Gallo. It feels like he's just kind of missing shots. He's not really taking terrible shots. He's just not making anything. He does a lot of little things, you know, and he still has a pretty good IQ. He looks really weird out there sometimes when he dribbles, but that's just because that's just how he looks, I think. But he's still an analytics dream. He takes threes and drives to the rim. He takes smart shots, and when he's not making them, you kind of think, well, you know, that's not a bad shot that he took. What do you guys think about Gallo and just how he's been? Are you just kind of staying patient with him and thinking those shots will come and he's taking the shots that he's getting? Or how do you feel? Do you feel otherwise, like he's forcing the issue? We can start with you, Aditya.
Gallo, he looks very much like an NBA player where he moves and stuff. So just at least from my eye test, I haven't like really tried to start digging into the nitty-gritty of his game yet, but I think that it feels to me like first impression that it's shooting slumps and a lot of things that'll regress hopefully to a higher mean. The other part of it is that, you know, I'm sure this can go into our conversation about substitution patterns and staggering and whatnot, but it feels like he's been getting the majority of his minutes still at small forward, like with both Blake and DeAndre on the court, especially in the last two, three games. The first two games were blowouts, so slightly different there. I think we knew from Gallo's time in Denver and just watching him and the way the NBA is going that his best position, like Blake, is at the four. So I think something to try and do there is to try and get more time separately for them, you know, either by, I think, you know, one of them, either Blake or Gallo, should be the first of the starters to come out in the first and third quarters so they can come back in and anchor the bench unit. I think at least what we saw with Portland seems like Blake is better suited to that role. And this way you get Gallo at the four with DeAndre Jordan and then, like, bringing someone like Wes Johnson spacing the floor. So I think, you know, just looking at the players who they're sharing the floor with could influence that too.
Yeah, how about you, Rob?
Yeah, I mean, I think mostly it's shooting. Right now he's shooting 30% from the field and 25.8% from three. Those numbers will improve substantially because for his career he's 41.8% from the field, 36.8% from three. I mean, a field goal percent shooting isn't great for a guy his size, but that's tempered by his three-point shooting and ability to get to the free throw line. I do worry, though. He really does look slow out there. He's always been slow, but there have been times where it really looks like he should be able to get the corner on a guy and just hasn't been able to. I don't know if he's actually lost a step or if he's just kind of working his way into shape and it's about finding a rhythm. And also, once he starts making more shots, I'm sure things will open up a little bit more for him. So I'd say like 75% of my worries, I think, are just about shooting. And I think he'll come around there because he's still getting rebounds. He's still making passes. He's still, you know, a perfectly fine NBA defender. And if he can get those shooting numbers up, he'll still be good. I don't know if like the really the super high foul line proclivity is going to be there this season, especially with Blake and DeAndre in the paint. I don't know. I think the Clippers definitely overpaid him. And the question is, if he can get his shooting numbers back up, it'll just be a minor overpay. But if they remain pretty bad, obviously they'll be better than this, then it'll look like a bad signing. So I really hope that once he's able to hit those threes, that defenders will come out just a little bit harder on him and he'll be able to use those pump fakes that he loves so much to draw fouls and get to the hoop. But right now he does look a step slow. Like I said, the other option could be just he's still a little rusty and still needs a little more time to just get in shape, which is true for a lot of NBA players. I'm not super worried about him long term, but a little bit worried. I think there's definitely some reason for worry.
Yeah, I mean, he looks a bit slow, but I haven't really followed Gallo enough in his Denver days even to say how much of a step he's lost. So I'll give him some time. He's always felt like a slow player to me. I remember, I think Bruce and Ralph were talking about how he was initially a dunker when he first came into the league. And it's kind of incredible to think of that now, considering how slow he gets. He couldn't finish that dunk that he had at the end of the game last night. To think of him as a dunker at any time is kind of feels like ages ago. But he used to have that step. And he doesn't quite have it anymore. But he still seems like an effective player. It'll be interesting to see how minutes get staggered between him and Blake, if they get staggered. If we play some more small ball even with Blake at the center, even though it seems like Willie Reed is pretty much coming in whenever DJ comes out. Speaking of which, and rotations. So there have been a lot of interesting rotations, especially with Milos Teodosic, who's out with his plantar fascia injury. His plantar fascia injury really, which is fairly nonspecific. We don't really have much details on what's going on. I know there have been plantar fascia injuries in the past where people are out 3 to 4 months, and there are some that people have been out 4 to 6 weeks. We don't really have that much details. We know he was on a stationary bike. I don't really feel that says too much to be read into. The good thing about plantar fascia, if he had a plantar fascia tear, normally those heal entirely versus plantar fasciitis. You know, he doesn't have plantar fasciitis. So plantar fasciitis pretty much wipes you out for a season. I mean, Wes Johnson had plantar fasciitis a couple seasons ago and was not very good. He somehow managed to be worse the season following, which was last year. But normally, plantar fasciitis is just something that chronically cripples a player throughout the year versus a plantar fascia tear, which you just need to rest entirely. And you can come back pretty well. I remember Danny Granger is the big example of this, because I had him on my fantasy basketball team. He was out a few months, and then he came back, and he was fantastic. So this was before his career tail dived. And that's always my big reference as far as a plantar fascia tear goes to. So hopefully Milos comes back healthy. Do you guys have any thoughts on Milos? I know he was barely with us, and the rotations we've had since Milos has been out, the guard rotations, I mean, we're pretty much just working with three guards and with a little Sundarius Thornwell peppered in there. First, just, I guess, your thoughts on Milos and his injury, since we didn't talk about it. Rob, we can start with you.
It was a bummer. It was just a bummer.
Yeah.
Because not only is he good, and I think there were some worries, and definite worries, understandable worries about his game translating to the NBA, but I think, I know it's preseason, but between preseason and the game and a half that we saw them, it really looked like a lot of those worries were unfounded. He's able to get a shot off. His release is super quick.
Yeah.
His shot at three-point range, I think it's going to be streaky, but I think it's going to be there. He's draining some threes off the dribble, and his passing and playmaking is as advertised, if not better. And he's one of the 10 best passers in the NBA when he's healthy, and I mean, that's honestly probably low. So it was sad to see, because not only is he good and a unique presence on the Clippers in terms of his vision and passing ability, but he's also just super fun. The Clippers, even though they've been good, they haven't really been a super fun team to watch this year, I don't think. I've enjoyed watching them because they've played good basketball and really played together. But Austin Rivers isn't like the flashiest player. Gallinari just relies on free throws. Kind of same with Lou Williams, who's a better version of Jamal Crawford, but also a less fun version. And Blake's dunks are a thing of the past for the most part, though he had that one stuff over Gobert, which was really rewinding the clock. Just from an aesthetic perspective, it was rough to lose Milos, because he's such a fun player to watch. Every time he does that little underhanded pass or does a no look or hits a lob, it just really gets the crowd going, gets us fans going too. I mean, there was a 3 or 4 minute highlight video made from his preseason play. Like, that never happens. So it was bad. And I think the Clippers, their offense has suffered since he went down. Pat Beverly is a better passer and playmaker than people think, I believe anyway, but he's nowhere near the playmaker that Teodosic is, just not even in the same realm. And certainly Lou Williams and Austin Rivers are not anywhere near there. So it's tough. Blake is a good passer, very good for a big man, but he doesn't really have that next level vision for an offense. He's more of a rudimentary playmaker and passer than a spectacular one. So the Clippers miss Teodosic, they do, and the fans miss him. And I really hope he comes back soon and healthy, of course, because he's missed out there. He really is. His passing, even his shooting a little bit. The Clippers need his ball movement and his ability to get guys really open looks, because their offense has bogged down the past couple games, especially against the Pistons, but even against the Blazers somewhat, I think. And they've really needed a guy who can just get an offense into sets, get open looks, and rally a team around open shots and energizing the crowd. And Milos is that guy. And nobody else on the team really is, at least on offense.
Yeah, how about you, Aditya?
It's a shame to see Milos Mania, or whatever kind of name we want to come up with, be grounded for a little bit more time before truly taking off. But hopefully we can get the full Teodosic experience at some point later this year. I don't know. I said preseason, you know, when everyone started talking about, oh, shoot, are the Clippers going to be fun this year? It's going to be a fun team to watch. You know, I started buying the team now after the 4-0 regular season start, but back then I was still very much bracing myself. Like, I've seen this story too many times before. We're going to get burned again. So my mostly, but not completely, because you never know with the Clippers. Mostly joking comment was, you know, the Clippers are going to break your heart. And I predicted, you know, this year Milos is going to get like lung cancer midseason or something. Well, I mean, a foot injury or whatever is not quite that, but there's always this lurking suspicion back at what if something goes wrong, like, or their timetable is way off, like, obviously, like with Blake 2 years ago. So,
yeah.
I'm just hoping he can be out there soon enough again. Be nice to see that shaggy-haired man, that shaggy-haired virtuoso on the floor.
Yeah, though he shaved his beard in that to start the season, but
throwing,
yeah, no.
And lobs to God.
Yeah, shovel passes. He's great. I really enjoyed Milos. I think DeAndre misses him. I think the offense in general just misses him. He's as good of a passer as was advertised, which is really incredible because he was pretty much made out to be a semi-point guard, sort of the way that people talked about his vision and his playmaking, but you can see really quickly that he really does have that kind of vision. So I really hope he comes back as soon as possible. But right now we're just kind of left in the dust as far as when he's going to come back and the degree of his injury is really frustrating. But as long as he's back, as long as he's back by year's end, honestly, I'll be fine. If he can be back by December, January, like, I was afraid that as soon as Milos, I know he grabbed his foot, and on the replay, it's pretty obvious that he's grabbing his foot. But as soon as I heard the guy say he heard a pop, and then he was reaching for his foot/ankle, I was right away just afraid for an Achilles injury. But that luckily wasn't the case. It was clearly his foot, and, you know, this isn't the worst case scenario for a sort of a non-contact injury. So I'm just glad that he's not out the year because I really enjoy watching him play. And hopefully he can come back and be completely 100%. All right. So going from Milos to sort of the rotations in lieu of Milos' injury, what have you guys liked about the rotations? I know we've talked a little bit about hoping that Danilo gets staggered a little bit in that power forward situation so he can really be optimized with the second unit, or Blake, vice versa. Blake can sort of be brought out early and then brought in with the second unit. I think Doc's done a decent job about keeping one of his three stars out there, but maybe not necessarily in the best position to succeed, particularly with Gallo. I know he's been really into Willie Reed for DJ, which has actually worked out pretty well. Willie Reed has actually looked to be a pretty good player. He's drawn a lot of charges. He has a pretty good touch around the rim. Lou Williams has had a really good relationship with him, sort of reminiscent of Jamal and DJ last year. So, and Lou Williams in general has just been kind of an interesting player. Really, the bench unit has been an interesting experiment, more interesting than in past years. So really, there's a lot to unpack here. We can start with you, Aditya, as far as unpacking the bench unit and our rotations.
Well, yeah, I've been kind of concerned, like, looking at the first, if you look at the overall season stats, 5 games so far, they don't really jump out. But if you take out, like, the first 2 games, which were both blowouts with significant amounts of garbage time, look at the minute spread, like, over the last 3 games, the starters are all playing. We've got Blake Griffin, 38.6, Gallinari, 38.4, Beverly, 37.8, DeAndre, 36.8, Austin, 34.2. I feel like, you know, Doc's struggling a little bit more. I think Milos going down may have had something partly to do with this, and just he's doesn't really know how to go from here or trying to figure out new things. But I think it's hopefully, you know, something that he figures out soon, because this is not the kind of minutes distribution we should be seeing all season. And I think especially like the last game or two, it seems like he's been leaning more on close to full bench units. Before, you know, we had stretches where it was mostly mixed units and maybe 1 or 2 minutes of full bench. But now it feels like we've got majority bench lineups for slightly longer periods of time these last 2 games, with just one starter on the floor, like Austin. In some cases, only Austin or Beverly is the only starter. I guess the kind of rotations I'd like to see for the time being with Milos out, you need to have, I guess Blake probably playing with the bench is the best bet. You know, take him out earlier than other people, like take him out like 6-minute mark, then bring him back in for the full second slash fourth quarters. And you bring in Wes Johnson, or if you want to go small, you can go 3-guard lineups with Lou Williams. And you have go 4 out around DeAndre with Gallinari at the 4. Give him more room to initiate the offense and run things. And you come back in the next at the start of the next quarter with Blake in and maybe one of the guards coming back in early, and then have them run that with, say, Willie Reed and Wes or Decker and Thornwell, I guess, you know, full second unit kind of lineup around Blake, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I can see it a bit. How about you, Rob?
Yeah, I definitely think they should go small a little bit more. I think that Wes has looked better this season, but his shot is still not great, and Gallo's shot is off, and they might shoot a little bit better with more spacing. So I definitely agree that they should go small a little bit more. And I do think that that should include a fair amount of Sundarius Thornwell. His offense is definitely kind of rough, but his defense looks very legit. He got torched yesterday on a backdoor cut by Bradley, but Bradley's really good at those.
Yeah.
And he's been good otherwise. He does not like an all-world defender yet, but it's his rookie season. He's played 5 games. And for that level, he's been absolutely fantastic, especially for a late second-round pick. So I'd like to see a little bit more of him, to be honest, though I do understand if Doc yanks him if the offense clogs up and he needs spacing. And I really do think Juwan Evans should get a bit of a shot as well. I know that there are 3 guards, and those 3 guards are all a lot better and have a lot more experience than Evans, but the minutes are just too high, especially if Doc wants to play small ball with 3 guards, which he should do, I think. That will just add up to a ton of minutes, especially for Beverly, because, I mean, I know Beverly is really good. We've talked about how good he is, and it's tough to take him out, but you need to let him rest. So in the other minutes, he's just as ferocious as he possibly can be. And Lou and Austin really can't play point guard. When you have them out there together, especially if they're with Blake, there's enough creation and ball handling and stuff so the offense isn't horrible. But when they're out there by themselves, especially if Blake isn't on the court, and that happened some the past couple games, that is ugly offense. Lou is good, and he's been a nice, very nice player so far. But he is not a point guard, and neither is Austin Rivers. And if they don't have Blake, and I don't think Gallo really even qualifies, because while I do think Gallo should get a shot to run those units, he's still not really a great passer. He can make passes and plays, and he's definitely not like a ball hog, but he's not Blake Griffin. And I just don't want to see Austin or Lou run lineups without Blake out there. So Evans is a second-round rookie, and point guard is probably the toughest position for NBA rookies to adjust to, just because there's so much pressure and running an offense and everything, and point guard is the most stacked position in the NBA right now, so you have to defend all these tough guys. But I really think he should be given what Thornwell has been given the past few games, which is a few minutes in each half just to see how he does. And if he can help get the offense into sets better and just move the ball around a little bit, even if his actual stats aren't very good, I think he could be a real bonus out there. So I'd like to see more of him and a little more Thornwell. And like Adithya said, you just have to bring those minutes down, especially because, for one, most of the Clippers aren't very young anymore. And Austin himself, like, he's not old, certainly, but, like, he's not a young guy either in NBA terms anymore. Certainly Blake and DJ and Gallo and Beverly aren't. And high 30s is just way, way too many minutes for them on a consistent basis. They should be low 30s, maybe mid 30s for Blake, DJ, and Beverly, who are really needed out there to win games against tough opponents, but just can't do 38, 39 minutes game in and game out. But the one of them is going to get injured, and then the Clippers are going to be really in bad shape. So
yeah,
I'm not a real big Sam Decker fan, and I think everything we've seen from what he has played, the fact that he hasn't gotten many minutes, and then how kind of bad he's looked in those minutes. It's a sign that I don't think he's really adjusted to Doc's schemes yet on either side. But instead of giving him like 2 or 3 minutes a game, which is just pointless, either give him 5 or 6, maybe 3 minute stretches in each half, or just don't play him because he's not going to get into rhythm otherwise. I'd like to see him get minutes too. And really, I mean, I want the Clippers to win games, obviously, but if there's any time to experiment, it's the start of the season. And there are games where Decker plays and Thornwell doesn't, cool, vice versa. Adam Evans sometimes, like, all that is good, but I really want to see a little bit more experimenting. And again, like, if Evans or Thornwell in particular aren't good, Doc should have a quick yank, and we can't get upset because at least he's trying them, but I really would like to see him try. And then, yeah, I mean, I would like to see Gallo units, Gallo run, like, where he's leading the team, basically, with the second unit, but he can't really initiate offense. So he can be the featured player, kind of, without actually controlling the ball from, like, the top of the key or wherever. But, yeah, I think the staggering needs to be a bit better. I think there are times when there's just not enough playmakers on the floor, not enough spacing on the floor, and Doc really needs to fix that, especially because, again, without Tay Dosich, the Clippers don't have that true playmaker and point guard who can get the offense consistently into sets and get guys – open shots. There really haven't been many of those the past few games, except in transition. And then sometimes at the start of the game is off ball movement, but it seems to fade away as the game goes long and teams adjust to them. So, yeah, play Evans and Thornwell more. Maybe give Decker a real shot instead of just a couple of random minutes. If he's not ready to play and doesn't know this stuff, then just don't play him and play other guys more. But yeah, I mean, I think Doc has been fine so far. I think he could be quite a bit better, and I hope he will adjust, and I hope he will make some changes.
Yeah, and going along with that, Tayo Dosic, Gallinari-led second unit would be great. And then you have Tayo Dosic bringing the ball up and Gallinari just kind of setting up and trying to essentially run the offense through him, but you would have Tayo Dosic and the option of a big man pick and roll and trying to get that going. And that would be a nice second unit. Unfortunately, Tay Dosich isn't around right now, but something to keep in mind for the future. I also would love Evans to get some minutes. I think he showed us a lot in the preseason, especially in that Lakers game. I do appreciate that Doc has been trying to play Thornwell and even Decker some in the last couple of games. And I do feel like Thornwell is going to stick because Doc has been having him defend the best perimeter player in pretty much every game that he's been in. So that's a lot of confidence to show someone like that, even though Thornwell is getting minutes in lieu of the Tayo Dosic injury. But it seems like Thornwell is as ready to play those defensive minutes as anyone. And I think the offense will hopefully come a bit. He did have one long, I think it was against the Blazers, where he had practically a three-pointer in the corner that went in pretty well. And he had that nice lob to DeAndre Jordan. He has some good offensive instincts. I think he's just kind of too used to bully ball. Like, he actually had a nice layup in the Detroit game too, where he kind of bullied his way in. I think that's the kind of the way that he's used to playing, and he's going to have to rely on his three-point shooting a little bit more. I think he can do it. He shot pretty well in Carolina last year, so hopefully that's something he can put into his game. I really like Thornwell, though. I think he can be a nice addition to this roster. And if he can stick right now and show Doc some, and they do go back into three-guard lineups, even when Tayo Dosic comes back, he could have a spot in the rotation. So we'll see about that. Really quickly, Lou Williams, is he more of the same problem with Jamal Crawford, just a little bit less, or is he a revelation? What do you guys think? We can start with you, Aditya.
I mean, so far, you know, he's been fun. He's had, for the most part, you know, pretty good games. He provides a lot of offense. And, you know, he's not that unaesthetic to watch. So I was, like, a little bit surprised by that more than anything. But I also don't want to get my expectations too high at all, because especially if we're looking more long-term and stuff, you know, I don't think there's any player in the NBA right now, or possibly even historically, who has a bigger fall off in production and shooting efficiency from regular season playoffs than we will, like, way more than even Jamal. So I don't think we should get too attached to him at all. I think we should expect that the worst from him when the games are the biggest, even though that may not necessarily be a fault of, like, his own personal fault, like, oh, he shrinks in big moments, but just the way the game is played and how it changes from and how teams prepare for the playoffs differently from the regular season. But, yeah, I would still, like, be looking to trade him.
Yeah, how about you, Rob?
Yeah, it's really tough. Until Teodosic gets healthy, I don't think they can trade him just because they're so thin, unless they're getting another guard back. And really the past few games, it's been evident how not reliant they are, but on how helpful his playmaking and shot creating is. There are times when the Clippers just don't look like they have anything, and then Williams is able to free himself up for a layup or a jumper or whatever. And his scoring has been really nice. He's more efficient than Jamal. He takes some bad shots, but not quite as many. And I think he's less locked into the Jamal of this play I'm going to shoot or this play I'm not. He does that a little bit, but not as badly. So I think he's a definite upgrade. I think his defense is somewhat better. It's still really bad, but it's not nearly as bad as Jamal's, I don't think. But I agree with Aditya. I mean, he has a relatively large sample size of not showing up in the playoffs. And again, it's not only because of him. I think he's one of those guys, again, like Jamal, who has a ton of confidence. He thinks every shot is going in. It's just that his game is pretty reliant on getting to the free throw line and on getting there with some vet tricks and some a little bit of like flopping or whatever you want to call it. You know, making the contact seem worse than it really was. And that kind of stuff just doesn't tend to fly in the playoffs, and his efficiency just completely dries up. So I also wouldn't get too attached. I think right now they kind of need him. And I think, honestly, it'll really depend quite a bit on Thornwell and Evans and if Teodosic comes back and what he looks like when he comes back. But if Thornwell can show that he can do at least some stuff on offense, if he can hit threes at like a league average rate or maybe a little below, and if Evans gets minutes and is good enough to be like, well, this guy can at least bring the ball up and, you know, run a basic pick and roll and hit catch and shoot threes, basically just, you know, a lower tier backup point guard in his rookie season, I think that Lou Williams becomes more expendable, especially once Teodosic comes back. So I also would not get too attached. I don't think he's going to be here the entire season, but that really depends on where the Clippers are in the playoff race and how the young guys are looking. If Thornwell and Evans don't really look like they're ready to be rotation players, then unless they're trading Lou for another guard, I don't think they'll really be able to trade him. I like those young guys a lot, so I'm hopeful that they show enough that we can move on, but I mean, he's good. I think that, again, like I mentioned earlier, he's just not as fun as Jamal. Like, even when Jamal was really bad, he just looked good. Like, his handles are so good, and the shots he took were just ridiculous. And Lou doesn't really do that. He's a gunner, but he doesn't do ridiculous stuff like Jamal does, at least not nearly as frequently. So I think fans won't be quite as attached to him, even though he's a lot better than Jamal was. So, yeah, I mean, basically the same as Aditya. I think he's good. I think the Clippers kind of need him right now, but I still think he's going to get traded at some point before the deadline. And if not, then I don't think the Clippers, even if he does stick out the year.
Yeah, I just like when he makes shots. He seems to make a lot of really weird shots, but his three-pointer is really weird. Like, his off-the-dribble three-pointer is just kind of strange, but he makes them. So he's a creative player. So I'm surprised that I've gotten used to him so quickly, considering I thought he would just be the same problems. I know that he's not completely the same as Jamal. Jamal is so reliant on jumpers and just really tough mid-range shots, and Lou's really good at getting to the hole and hitting threes. He is a nice in-between of, he is a, you know, he doesn't really take many as many mid-range shots as Jamal. It just drives you crazy. So it's a much more efficient version of Jamal, I guess you could say, but he makes shots and we need the shot making right now. So a lot of this, a lot of similar situations where if we lose a score, then Lou Williams will be really pressed to be a featured player on this team even more. But really the bench needs him to score too, because there's a nice, there's a lot of nice bench players, but none of them can really score. And he has some nice chemistry with Willie Reed already. So I kind of like Lou Williams. It's been kind of weird. It's been nice, but it's been a pretty decent player. Anyways, anything else you guys want to mention? Do we have any Twitter questions out there?
Oh, hang on. I just remembered while we were, I guess this is more hypothetical, but
yeah.
Remember over the summer when the Clippers were engaged with the Celtics in trade talks? Like, we didn't think it seemed like a very feasible thing at the time, but it turned out that in the Avery Bradley deal, like the Clippers were actually runner-ups to Detroit. I think either them or the Lakers were number two and the other was number three. But, and that proposed deal would have been Lou, was like the the Pistons did like Marcus Morris and a pick for Bradley or something like that. I think the Clippers would have had a similar deal structure there with Lou Williams. I was going to bring that up now, like, especially since we just saw Avery Bradley, like, how do you think this team would be if we'd made that, if they had pulled off that deal and gotten Avery Bradley for pretty much in a heist, you know, then your backcourts would be, I guess starting backcourt right now would be Beverly and Bradley, right?
Oh my goodness, are you kidding me? I would have loved that so much.
Oh.
I would have loved that so much. Anyways, Rob, do you think that would have been a good move?
It definitely would have been a good move. I actually tend to think Bradley is a little overrated. I really like him. He's an awesome guy, and he's definitely a good player. I think his defense is a little overrated, and I think he has a tendency to take some really bad shots. Like, even in the Clippers game, Austin was playing him well, but he was, instead of taking threes, he was dribbling in and taking contested twos, and he really takes a lot of mid-range and long twos. So he's a good three-point shooter, and he's actually a really good cutter. Like, again, that one time he torched Thornwell. But he takes a lot of not great shots. That wouldn't be as big a deal on the Clippers because he'd have a smaller offensive role. He's good. He's definitely good. He's better than Lou Williams. that would have been a great move. And, yeah, I like him a lot. I think he's a good guy. He brings a lot of intangibles as well. Everybody on the Celtics and around the Celtics loved him. I know from what I heard, he was like one of the – you know, the favorite teammates out there. So it would have been great to have him and Beverly together, and that backcourt would have been a tough defensive duo and
locked
would have
down.
Talked a lot too, which would have been really fun in a different way than Austin talks. But and that would have been great. I'm a bit sad it didn't happen. And yeah, he's made the Pistons quite a bit better. I mean, I like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, but Bradley is a much better player at this point in their careers.
Yeah, I would have loved that deal. I would have. I think I heard that, overheard that too, and it made me sad. I think I'm trying to block it out of my memory that we came very close to getting Bradley and Beverly backcourt. It would have been so much fun. Just would have been so much fun to watch on defense. But oh well, it's all good. We have Austin Rivers and Teodosic. So Teodosic is a lot of fun. Do we have any Twitter questions?
Yeah, we do. We got a couple of joke ones, which I'm not really going to bring up. One was about the Dodgers game, and one was about somebody on Twitter. But one question was, Thornwell more. I think we all kind of agree that he should. Do you guys have anything else you want to say about Thornwell, Doc using him? I think he should just play a few more minutes a game. But
yeah, I love Thornwell. I hope he gets more minutes. Like, I think it goes without saying that I love that kid. I think he's going to be a good player.
Anything else, Adivia, on Thornwell? The other question is also about Thornwell, actually. So the next question the first one was from Big Daddy on Twitter, and the second one is from Johnny Walker, who's a friend of the pod, uh, a, a Clipper Twitter standby.
What's his handle? Just give him
JDub23. J_Dub23_1. And he asked if Thornwall D-Wade Light. So I kind of see this. They have very similar builds. They're a little small in height for shooting guards, but have really long arms. I mean, Thornwell just isn't as skilled as Wade was coming out of college, which isn't – it's not a shame. I mean, Wade was awesome at Marquette. I mean, Thornwell was really good at South Carolina too, but not nearly as polished offensively. And he's just not as good an athlete as Wade was. I mean, young Dwayne Wade was an incredible athlete just in terms of leaping and lateral quickness. And Thornwell has some of that side to side. Like, he's obviously – and he was an All-SEC defender, first team. So he's a really good lateral movement. But he does not have Wade's explosiveness or leaping ability in general. So, and that's not even going into the offense. So, I mean, kind of like the ideal version of Thornwell would definitely have some D-Wade in him in terms of just being a really good defender, being able to do a lot of that bully ball and getting to the hoop, good offensive rebounder, and also a solid passer. But I think Thornwell is definitely more of a secondary or tertiary creator in terms of they want him spotting up, shooting threes, and then if guys rush out, then he can create off the dribble a little bit. But his handle is nowhere near as good as Wade's, and his athleticism is just is fine, but it is not Dwayne Wade's, which is not a knock because Dwayne Wade's like the third or fourth best shooting guard of all time. So it's really no shame. But what do you guys think of that comparison?
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much watched every game of Dwayne Wade's rookie season. It happened to be one of my favorite non-Clipper teams. Dwayne Wade, Eddie Jones, Caron Butler, Lamar Odom, and Brian Grant. Ray Ferrellson off the bench. That was a really fun team. That was a team that started 0-7 and then went to the playoffs and beat the Hornets and then took the Pacers to 6. That was a really fun team. And Wade's just like you said, Wade was just much more of an athletic force, and his body was much more filled out even as a rookie compared to Thornwell's. And yeah, that guy just had a really good knack for the basket. You can kind of see the bully ball, I guess, a bit if Wade was not a 3-point shooter, and even though he had a game winning 3-pointer in game one against the Hornets, that was pretty memorable, but he was not a 3-point shooter his first year. He's still not a 3-point shooter. So just a kind of a different play. Really, I want to think of Thornwell as more of a three and D guy just before I think of him as a scorer of Wade's mentality. I want to think of him more of a Tony Allen that has better offensive instincts than I want to think of him as like a superstar. I don't want to jump the gun just yet. What about you? Is it anything on him?
On Thornwell or?
Thornwell.
I mean, it's one thing to say like he looks like Wade or some of his game resembles Wade, but it's another to try and map a similar career arc onto him. I think that's a huge step. And, you know, obviously, like we said, from Wade's rookie season, like Thornwell is nowhere near that. So it's like how on the last pod, you know, we were talking about comparing Teodosic to Pistol Pete. And obviously Teodosic is not anywhere near on that level, but his game is just reminiscent. He has like some of the same kind of mannerisms and signature moves that Maravich had. So I feel like it's a similar thing here with Thornwell and Wade.
Yeah. Alrighty, anything else, Rob, on Twitter?
That was it for Twitter. It was a little late, and the Clippers weren't playing tonight, so people on Twitter, and they're probably watching the Dodgers game, which go Dodgers, but they're down
go
right
Dodgers.
Now.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, but I don't really have anything else. I mean, we touched on just about everything. What do you guys think about the Warriors game tomorrow? Do you think the Clippers can sneak out a win or no?
No.
No, I don't think so either, especially since the Warriors lost tonight.
Yeah.
I think they will beat the Warriors once this year. I believe we talked about this in the last pod or the one before that.
I think the Warriors won't come out quite as hard against them now that they don't have Paul and now that they're not really in that contender status anymore. So I think they might be able to sneak one out, especially since the Warriors are looking a little sloppy. But I don't think tomorrow is going to be that day. Do you think they have any hope tomorrow, Aditya?
I don't know. I wanted to say they did, but, you know, obviously with Golden State losing yesterday's game, who knows now? I mean, it seems unlikely now. But, you know, Golden State right now, talking to Golden State fans and stuff about the way their year's gone so far, you know, they've seemed like they've become a little bit more of the switch team this year, been a little bit more lackadaisical. And Kerr is obviously doing whatever he wants with their rotation. Just they go, 13, 14 deep, and then they just play a different full bench unit every game. So who knows there, you know? Maybe the Clippers will catch a break or two. But on the other hand, I think it'll be more likely that it'll be something like the Wizards game or, you know, their last game against them last year when they're in Oracle and were up 15 in the first half for that 50-point quarter. So something where the Clippers are at least ahead for maybe not by double digits, but at least ahead or keeping neck and neck for 2.5, 3 quarters maybe, and then the wheels falling off after, you know, Kevin Durant taking over, Steph kind of just having his way. Although maybe we'll get the dream, have Austin Rivers shout again on not national TV, but NBA TV.
Yeah, second game of a back-to-back for the Warriors. So you never know. This would seem like an opportunity, if anything, for the Clippers to maybe break that streak. But I don't think so. I still can't believe the Warriors kept Iguodala and Livingston. I thought for sure they were going to lose one of those two, but they didn't. And they got Nick Young. So the rich get richer. And they got a killer rookie. The Warriors are a video game. It's crazy. But yeah. I think that'll do it for this episode. You guys have anything else you want to talk about?
Do we want to mention anything else about the NBA right now? Oh, wait. The Clippers are tied, I think, with, who is it? The Grizzlies for the fewest losses in the league right now. The Spurs lost again today. They lost to the Pacers. They lost the Magic. And then they lost the Pacers, and the Magic lost today. So now every team in the East has at least two losses. The Pistons are actually, after today's game, they're number one in the East at 5-2.
Oh, wow.
So the Grizzlies are 5-1. The Clippers are 4-1. Everyone else has at least two losses. So the Clippers were, before the Pistons game, their last undefeated team in the league. So, you know.
So Grizzlies, Clippers, Western Conference Finals.
Yep. That long-awaited rematch.
Round four. Four?
Three.
Yeah. That'll be exciting. Chandler Parsons versus Danilo Gallinari.
Huh.
Anyway.
A real showstopper.
Yeah. Anything around the league that's been interesting to you guys, aside from the Clippers? Anything caught your eye, Rob?
Do you want to talk
about
really
the Clippers?
What?
Huh?
All right, go ahead with the Cavs first. I was saying we should talk about some of the former rotation players who from last year around the league now.
Jamal
and Luke.
Yeah. Well, the Cavs look horrible. I'll get on to other ex-Clippers, but I didn't think they'd be as good as they have been the past years this year, just because Kyrie is good and they don't have Thomas, but they look awful, especially defensively. And Rose and Wade are not good defensively. It looks like J.R. Smith has lost a step on that end. And LeBron just doesn't try that hard on defense in the regular season. So I don't even know. They're going to be better than this, but might not be a top 2 or 3 seed in the East, especially if the Bucks keep playing. And I guess we should probably mention, again, Giannis as the MVP front runner right now for just embarrassing defender after defender. And nobody can stop him from getting to the basket. His lack of outside shooting doesn't even appear to matter. So he's crazy. But as for ex-Clippers, Chris Paul's been out, which is unfortunate, but also Clippers fans will recognize that as being all too familiar the past few years. Luke has been playing solidly for the Rockets, I believe. They've also had a few bad losses, but I think he's played pretty well. Jamal has once again somehow the main guy off the Timberwolves bench, and he had one game, I forget who was against, but he had two ice-cold vintage Jamal three-pointers where the clock was running out and nothing was going on. He just drained threes.
He had one against Utah, I believe.
Utah, yeah, it was. They were both against Utah, that's right. So he's been good. And then who else? JJ? I don't think he's been very good for the Sixers.
He's injured, yeah.
He's been pretty solid, I think, from what I remember. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I just the Sixers just annoy me just because they're fans. Like, the fans that I know on Twitter, like, the few that I'm, like, friends with are cool, but, like, so many of their fans are just with the process and overhyping Simmons and Embiid, and I can't deal with it. It's almost as bad as the Lonzo Ball stands.
JJ's averaging 3 rebounds and 3 assists a game right now for the Sixers.
Whoa.
I mean, shooting 42% from the field, 39% from 3. But, yeah, he had a 7 rebound game a few games ago. Yeah.
Jeez.
Which kind of just totally foreign to see JJ or Jamal, or I guess even Austin. You know, Austin was like right down there with them the last few years, get more than like 3 rebounds in a game. But the average of that is.
Yeah,
I think
Jamal's
JJ,
getting rebounds.
I think JJ's back tightened up in his last game, though, so he might be
set up the last game, I think.
Yeah. Which is always a worry. So JJ's back is acting up. Chris Paul's knee is acting up. So some former Clippers are licking their wounds and familiar
Jamal
areas.
Jamal's still
chugging
along, looking the same as he did when he came into the NBA like 18 years ago.
Still looks like a rookie, but yeah.
Yeah.
but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I hope the Wizards are good this year. I really like the Wizards. I've always really enjoyed that team. It'd be nice to see if they take advantage of Cleveland's lull and Boston not having Hayward and maybe, you know, maybe made a real run for the one seed. They had a nice game against the Warriors the other day, even though the Warriors aren't playing particularly well. It'd be nice to see the Wizards.
Hello?
I think Siobhan cut off.
Right.
I don't know what happened there, but I agree with him on the Wizards. They've been my second favorite team behind the Clippers. They're like my Eastern Conference team. They have been for at least 3 or 4 years. Just love Wall and Beal, and they're fun and good. So I agree with that. But I don't really have much else to add.
Celtics have been pretty been a little bit surprised by how decent they've been the last few games, although obviously their defense sounds like it's like a little unsustainable based on their shooting, current like opponent shooting numbers and the shot distribution.
I don't think that'll hold.
It's still early, you know, it's been only 5-6 games for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like 5 games is like, I guess in terms of just seeing like what teams are running and like how individual players are looking, it's like enough sample size. But in terms of just how overall teams are playing, it's just way too early. Outside of the Bulls, which are, I mean,
of course.
Austin thought about the free ball, but lob, but jam! Wasn't a perfect pass, but a perfect reception. He is on 6th board. Rivers the free ball. Bingo! Back to Austin. Thought about it. Still thinking about it. Bingo! 2 in a row. Austin thought about the free ball, but lob, but jam! Wasn't a perfect pass, but a perfect reception. He is on 6th board. Rivers the free ball.
Austin thought about Austin thought about the three ball on live, but jam! Wasn't a perfect pass, but a perfect reception. Sixth board.